The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Oh, Oswald Cobb. Remember him? What a guy.
What a little bitch.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 529 for the week of September 23rd, 2024. I am innovative new street drug David T. Cole, and I'm here with unsubtle getaway car Sarah D. Bunting.
It's actually Lilac.
Celebratory slush puppy Tara Ariano.
Suicide by brain freeze.
Elaborate prosthesis Richard Lawson.
Spend 4 hours in my chair.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he's the chief critic at Vanity Fair. You've heard him with us many times before. It's Richard Lawson.
Welcome back, Richard.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
We're thrilled to have you back to talk about The Penguin, in which we pick up not long after the events that ended the 2022 feature film, The Batman. Crime boss Carmine Falcone has been killed by the Riddler, and it's presumed that his son Alberto, Michael Zegan, will be taking over for him. Oz Cobb, Colin Farrell, derogatorily known to some as the Penguin, derails Alberto's promotion just in time for Alberto's sister Sophia, Kristen Milioti, to be released from a long stint at Arkham Asylum, where she's been serving time for a series of murders that got her the nickname The Hangman. Oz, in fact, has a plan to use the chaos following the breach of a Gotham seawall to his advantage, and that plan involves pitting the city's two main crime families against each other. Is this the wrong time for a newly orphaned kid named Victor, Renzi Feliz, to become Oz's protege, or could it be the perfect time? The show was created by Lauren LeFranc, formerly of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Only one episode has aired so far on HBO, although we got access to the whole season. We will be careful about plot spoilers for future episodes. Let's do the Chen check-in. Richard, should our listeners watch The Penguin?
Much to my surprise, yes. Even my mom liked it.
Sarah?
Yeah, actually, to my surprise, too. It's good.
Dave?
Yeah, I'm going to say, give it a watch.
I didn't want to like it either, but here we are. I also thought it was pretty good. So let's get into it. Richard, in your review, which we'll link in the show notes, you write that the best compliment you can pay the show is it doesn't feel like a franchise offshoot. I agree. But talk about what it's like doing your job and seeing actors that you love to watch filling out the world of the 900th comic book adaptation.
Yeah, it can be depressing when someone says, where's that actor been? And it's like, oh, they've been tied up in superhero shit for the last 7 years. That's why you haven't seen them. And I worried about Colin Farrell when he got cast in The Batman, but I liked his performance in that. And then so when the show was announced, kind of, I think, almost concurrently with the movie, I was like, okay, maybe that could work if they approach it the right way. And they did. It's mostly just a really engaging crime story that happens to be set in Gotham, much like we used to say, he's a regular guy who just happens to be gay.
Right. I felt chafed the most, I think, personally, in the scenes between Colin Farrell and Deirdre O'Connell, who plays his mother, Frances. I couldn't help feeling like, no, not like this, which like I did when I saw whichever X-Men movie Michael Fassbender and Oscar Isaac were like facing off against each other in stupid costumes as well. It's like, oh, these two good actors doing this. Sarah, you're famously a fan of another HBO show about organized crime. How did this one manage to scratch that itch for you, since you said it did?
It did. I think that this was on my list in our fall preview for the I'm surprised that I'm psyched about it. I think we had a new category that we tried to be positive, and I was like, I don't know why I am interested in this, but the Colin Farrell of it all sort of gave me hope. I will echo Saeed Jones on Blue Sky in asking why he couldn't just be hot. I get why he can't, and after the movie, I understand why he can't even more, but it's like, just let him be Colin Farrell. But on the other hand, looking for the Colin Farrell in the performance and then finding it is sort of a fun, I don't know, penguin egg for people. And I also felt like this story, I know it's hack to say that things could have been a feature, and I'm happy to like watch the whole thing. I don't think they're going to necessarily run out of story or anything, but especially in the relationship between Oz and Vic, that kind of felt like a small, like not small story, but just like an indie feature story that just might have been interesting at an hour and 48 minutes instead of as a franchise series. Like I understand the world that we actually live in and you can't live like that, but this might have been more interesting, even more interesting to me as a how an organized crime figure acquires an assistant story. It felt just fantastical enough, but also real and like related to New York. And I thought it did a good job with the organized crime aspects without necessarily glamorizing it, or like it felt weirdly verite for something that was based on a comic. So I liked it.
Yeah. Richard, you said the same kind of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah, if you want that kind of thing, you should just watch the John C. Reilly movie, Cirque du Freak, colon, The Vampire's Assistant. Different kind of organized crime, but I believe they've changed the title. I don't think it says Cirque du Freak anymore, if anyone remembers what I'm talking about.
I do.
Yeah.
I will investigate that. Thank you for the recommendation.
No, please, dear God, don't watch that.
Yeah, I was taken out of the gritty world a little when they started talking about Drops and later Bliss as big scary drugs, but then I guess those names aren't sillier than poppers and ecstasy, really. So maybe that's fine.
Molly. There's
yeah, Molly, exactly. Exactly.
Martha, the new hot drug.
I mean, we've already touched on it. Would we say we're in a golden age of actors wearing makeup that makes them entirely unrecognizable, like also Jared Leto in House of Gucci or as Gold? Not the tone we would choose. Richard, you touched on this in your review and also on Farrell's complaints about the makeup. What are your feelings about this?
I mean, I think that it works for this. He has to be an underdog in some way. If it was just hot Colin Farrell stalking around Gotham, I don't think we would root for him in the same way. I also think it lets Colin Farrell get a little weird with it, get a little loose. I think his characterization on the show is pretty much note perfect as a really dangerous guy who still has that kind of neighborhood charm to him. You know, he's polite in weird ways, like almost like in the first episode, he's about to kill Vic. And then a second later, he's like, come on, kids, let's get breakfast, you know, like as if nothing just happened. And it reminds me a little bit of someone maybe running for president right now, or at least him more in his sort of insidious charm era. He's now just completely crazy. But like, I don't know, I think there's something menacingly appealing about what Colin Farrell is doing, because I think, you know, if you grow up in the Northeast of the United States, you kind of have met guys something like that.
Yeah, I was medium on the relationship with Vic, but I do think there was some nice writing around it when he's giving the speech about like why you should work for me, why he should work for him rather, and is sort of like the Falcones, they never knew what it was like to be us. They were never hungry, born full. Or I was like, yeah, that's a good line. Shit.
Yeah, there's a class politics to the show that I think is an interesting introduction. I mean, that's obviously been in Batman before, but I like the way they handle it in this. It feels very relevant to today, I guess.
Yeah. That whole his Rex Calabrese story in the beginning also reminded me of like how Pablo Escobar is portrayed in Narcos a little bit, where it's sort of like how a crime boss can be a community leader as well. And, you know, who also loves 9 to 5. There's so many layers to this guy.
And on Narcos, that was Colin Farrell in a Wagner Moura suit.
Oh, my God. Wow. The versatility.
He really can do it all.
Yeah. No. He played the sweater. Yeah.
He played all the planes.
He played the rampaging hippos. Farrell's performance is very big, no pun intended. Whoever played Sophia could have been at risk of getting blown off the screen. Richard, talk about how Kristen Milioti holds her own against him.
You know, when I was watching Once on Broadway, for which she was Tony nominated, I said she should play an underworld crime boss who's maybe insane. Similar when she was on How I Met Your Mother.
Sure.
No, I think she's such a great, versatile actress. You compare this work on The Penguin to what she did on Fargo, where she was, you know, had her own medal on that show, but was a much meeker, kind of passive character. Mm-hmm. And it just shows range. And I think that I've seen the whole season. I won't spoil anything, but like as the season goes, she just kind of reveals new facets and really broadens the character. I think that she is like a real standout on the series. Colin Farrell is going to get a lot of the flowers for it because of the transformation, but I think she deserves equal praise.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And Dave, you pointed out she's in a comic book adaptation and she has anime eyes.
She does. She's got big eyes, that lady. It really works for her. I'm going insane scenes that we see, especially when she's in Arkham. Yeah, she was my favorite part of this series. Least favorite part was definitely Victor. I could have done with less of that. I think Richard in his review was right that there's a few too many pieces floating around in the first season of The Penguin, and they could have probably concentrated on a couple fewer of them. Knowing that the showrunner is from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that felt the most Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.-y to me. You know, the little kid from Iron Man type of storyline. Mm-hmm. It was, I understand it, and I like parts of it, but it was like a lot of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. And Sarah, like the tutelage narrative does get a bit lost where Vic will pop back in later and you're like, oh, right, that thing, you know, like that whole right. plot. And I think the actor is so good that I wish that if we were if he was our eyes into the world more consistently, his presence would be more justified. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that he sort of works or doesn't work in terms of like whether this should be a series. I'm just saying it struck me based on the first episode that the way these actors were relating to each other and the way it was set up, this could have been a feature like, I don't know, The Visitor, I guess, something like that. That was like kind of small, but well observed. And Milioti is amazing. Like her ability to swing in a single line from really just hateful. And you're like, someone shoot this lady to... Oh, like extremely sympathetic, and that, you know, the Black Hole Sun video eyes do not hurt, but she's really good. She can contain multitudes in a single scene with a character in a way that you don't see that much. And especially in that you can watch this and sort of relate to these characters and performances without needing bat cannon, I think is impressive and unusual.
We were talking about Colin Farrell's transformations, but you know that Kristen Milioti played all the paintings in the Tim Burton film Big Eyes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm learning a lot from Richard today.
I will say with the Sophia character, like, and maybe this is kind of a cliched thing to say, but like, I think the fact that a woman created this show and is, you know, kind of the leading creative force creating the Sophia character, she resists a lot of the cliche that I think a male showrunner might have in trying to make Sophia a complicated female character.
Agree.
I'm also going to credit the female showrunner for, speaking of canon, giving us a Michael Kelly character who canonically fucks, because he does. He's so hot. I love it.
My mom was so excited because she loves him from House of Cards and everything. And she was like, oh, my friend is in The Penguin.
Happy for your mom and happy for me. I'm glad we have that in common because he's the best. We could probably wrap this up soon, but I was also happy, speaking of Italian-American excellence, to see Roma Torre and why one anchor turned why one discrimination suit bringer in the montage of anchors delivering news about the seawall breach at the beginning of the first episode. Good for her.
Is Roma Torre the only news anchor who also moonlights as a theater critic? Because it's just one of my favorite things about her.
I know that. That's a great detail. Wow.
Oh, yeah. She used to host a NY1 show called, like, On Theater, I think it was called.
Did not know. Wow. The range. The range in these Italian-American women. Bless them.
One more Batman character of your choice is getting a Penguin-style gritty reboot. What is your choice?
Boy.
The answer is King Tut. I'll let you guys think about it for a little bit.
Clearly.
Mm.
It's time to go around the dial talking about what we've been watching on TV lately. First up, Tara.
Well, speaking of reinventing existing IP, there are a few ways to do it. You can do a straight remake like the CW's Dynasty. You can do a sequel like Fox's Fantasy Island, where Elena Rourke was the original Mr. Rourke's niece. Or you can go the Doogie Kamealoha MD route. Set your show in a world where the characters know the thing you're referencing and go, this is like that. And that's what the new Matlock did. So Kathy Bates plays Madeline Matlock, a Southern lawyer, just like in the show from the 80s, but no relation. The only other thing to know is this lawyer's backstory is she retired 30 years ago, but she's had to return to practicing because her terrible husband died and left her a ton of debt. She's also caring for a grandson who she says hates her. She's been trying to get an associate job at a firm called Jacobson Moore, but they won't give her a chance. She suspects because of her age. So she talks her way into a morning meeting, shows her value, and gets a 2-week tryout on a case that everyone has kind of given up on. And it's hard to talk about the show without giving away how the series premiere ends. So I'll just say it was created by Jenny Snyder-Ehrman, previously of Jane the Virgin. So if you're grossed out by Maddie, for instance, being too excited about making big money defending unethical clients with deep pockets, trust it's going somewhere interesting. I was very ready to bail forever for about the first 3 quarters, and then they got me back in a big way. Also, there's Jason Ritter. He is so cute. Dave, you watched it. I don't know if you want to do a spoilers ahoy so we can actually spoil how it ends.
Spoilers ahoy.
So she's verbal Kent as well as Matlock. She's faking the whole thing. This firm, wow, it turns out, represented the pharmaceutical company that was partly responsible for a ruling that meant that opioids did not pull off the market fast enough for her daughter to not be killed by them. So she's infiltrating this firm to bring them down from within and find out who is to blame. And I was like, God damn it, they got me.
Oh my God.
She gets on a bus and like goes one stop and then gets off, and there's her limo is like parked around the corner and drives her back to her house in like Connecticut or wherever, this huge mansion.
If she's super rich,
yeah,
which she is, why, yes, not simply kill them?
Well, Dave, that's not fun.
But it's just results.
No, you're right. But are you going to keep watching the show?
Me? No, I was bored.
Okay.
I mean, I understand why people like the twist.
Yeah.
The rest of it, I felt, was a little... You know that moment in Fried Green Tomatoes where she slams her car into the other car and says something like, well, I got insurance, you know, because, mm-hmm, I'm old. Everything up to the reveal felt like that scene as a legal procedural.
And yes.
It was a lot about, yeah, I'm old, I'm invisible, nobody sees the old lady, look at all the things I can do when I'm invisible. Like the Steve Buscemi character in Monsters Incorporated, Tara.
Uh-huh.
It was a lot of that. And
yeah.
I just don't care. I just don't care. The spin was good. Like, mm-hmm, watching that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But all the infrastructure around it was very, very networky for me.
Yeah. I can't tell if it's like the good version of Elsbeth or the other way around. Like, they have a lot in common. Mm. And we talked about this last week with High Potential as well. All three of these shows, I would say, are on a continuum.
Obviously, The Good Wife started on the network, but even that was more daring than I, mm-hmm, think this show is going to be. This is definitely a 4-quadrant attempt at something.
There's a nice historical echo in that Andy Griffith secretly worked for an evil pharmaceutical corporation back. Mm-hmm.
Well, this was the most watched launch in 5.5 years. So the good news is, Dave, they don't need you to keep watching because everyone else is going to.
Matlock and Tracker, all yours, guys. Have at it.
Mm-hmm. I'm just hearing a chorus of old people from The Simpsons say, Matlock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For my plug, I interviewed 2 people from the new Hulu dramedy, How to Die Alone. I talked to Natasha Rothwell, who stars and also co-created it. She might be the co-showrunner and created it by herself. Anyway, Natasha Rothwell. And then I also talked to Bashir Salahuddin, formerly of co-creating Southside and Sherman's Showcase. He plays her brother in the show. He was great. And I managed to get through it without being a total fangirl, even though I think he is the best. So you can check out both of those. They are linked in the show notes.
All right. Our next up is Richard. Richard, what have you been watching recently?
I feel like every time I come on here, I bring you guys something from Food Network or HGTV. And I'm not going to end that tradition now. So the show that is most divisive in my house currently is a show on Food Network called Alex vs. America that my boyfriend hates for some kind of vaguely articulated reason, but that I love. The gist is that Alex Guarnaschelli, who anyone who has watched any Food Network knows who that is. She's a New York-based chef. She's a judge on Chopped a lot. She has her own other shows. She's an Iron Chef. And every week she goes up against three chefs who are hoping to beat her. And they're all experts in a particular kind of cuisine or a particular kind of food product. And she mostly beats them. You kind of know how it's going to end. There are a couple times when some chef wins, but it's rare. But I just like it for, well, the cooking, but also for Alex herself. I mean, kind of like the Penguin. She's tough and competitive, but also has a sort of gruff friendliness to her when you don't expect it. And I think she's just great on television. And I think it's really fun to watch.
It sounds like the concept for Iron Chef.
I mean, look, there's only so many cooking competition concepts out there.
But didn't Iron Chef have that? It had like the French chef and the Italian chef and the Japanese chef. Yes. And you had, okay.
I guess the flip is that now she's not the expert in any given cuisine. Like there's one where it's, you know, Asian cuisine and that's not her specialty, but she pulls it out in the end. So yeah, it's just satisfying 42 minutes on Max. You don't have to watch it on Food Network. I'm not, don't reattach the cord, folks. But yeah, I enjoy it. And then if I had to plug anything, you can always read my writing at vf.com. I recently wrote something actually that leads into what Sarah's going to talk about. I wrote about the Menendez show, but particularly one episode, and I'm sure that Sarah can guess what that episode is.
Sarah D. Bunting, can you guess what that episode is?
It's episode 5, and I did read this fine write-up by our esteemed colleague. I had really low expectations for Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez story, especially when critics didn't get screeners. I was like, that's either really bad or means nothing. It's hard to say here in 2024 sometimes. So anyway, Monsters exceeded my expectations easily. And it does a handful of sort of low-key things really well that might be a little hard to articulate. And I'm not sure I did in my review, which will be in the show notes, but over and above the acting, which is all outstanding, there is actually something more to say about the killing of Kitty and Jose Menendez in 1989 by their sons that or were better able to hear what there is to say about generational abuse and trauma better than we were decades ago when this happened is one thing. Another is that this case is just better suited to the let's look at monstrous behavior through the lens of the toxic masculinity that might be responsible approach than the Dahmer season of this franchise or the Ed Gein one that they just announced. Like sometimes ghouls are just ghouls and there isn't a comment to be made. But in the Menendez property, I think these creators understand that part of what continues to drive interest in the murders is that while we know what happened, we're never really going to know exactly why or whom to believe about why. And Monsters is okay with an uncomfortable ambiguity in that regard, or with various, quote, characters being both victims and perpetrators and both pitiable and fucking shitheads. The sense that the boys are spoiled assholes, but also pitiful victims. It's structured in such a way also that you start at a certain place with Lyle and Eric, you move to this other place of compassion and, you know, really wanting some middle way for them in terms of the justice system. And then the show kind of pulls you back to the possibility that they're full of shit, soulless assholes. So true crime stories often choose or have to choose a side to cohere. Monsters does that, but then it changes its mind a few times on which side it's on, which is interesting. Anyway, it's very good, maybe a little too long in the way of Murphyverse product, but it does maintain pace. It isn't too pleased with its own production design, although that's very good too. Again, my full review and most of the other bold type docudrama that came out in the last week. Hey, true crime, foot off the gas for like a day so that I can catch up. Anyway, you can find all of that at my review newsletter that I write with Eve Beatty. That's at bestevidence.fyi, and we'll link it in the show notes.
All right, coming up this Friday on Extra Extra Hot Great, our club member additional podcast for your weekend pleasure. It's the September Forcening, and we're going to be bringing you Family Feud Season 1, Episode 292. Remember that one, guys? Well, you're gonna.
Sure.
It's my third favorite.
That's available to club members. Go to extrahotgrate.com/club to learn about that and sign up.
Just two notes about that. Our submitter says it is the most infamous Fast Money family of the Richard Dawson run. Mm. That's A. And B, as of this recording, we are $43 away from unlocking cannon fodder. So tell all your friends who love this podcast but haven't signed up for the Patreon yet, now is the time, because that means we will be adding a cannon segment to the Friday episodes.
Could be a full cannon, could be one of our tiny cannons. Mm-hmm. It's going to be something cannon. It's going to be fun. And then come back right here next week on EHG Prime as Dr. Odyssey is finally here, guys.
Woo!
The Joshua Jackson 911 on a cruise ship, maybe TV series. That seems like the most networky thing ever to network here in the 2000s.
Putting the C back in Pacey.
That's right. And if you are wondering, am I throwing an in-person viewing party for this premiere? The answer is yes. So stand by to hear how that went. But our guest will be Jessica Morgan, who was a Dawson's Creek recapper on Television That Pity after Sarah and I both were like, we can't do this show anymore. So it'll be a great time on the old podcast next week.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
So recently I was rewatching maybe my favorite episode of, quite guiltily, in these appropriately propaganda-averse times, my longtime favorite show, Law & Order SVU. It's the premiere episode of season 9, called Alternate, in which the great Cynthia Nixon, who won a guest star Emmy for her troubles, plays a woman with multiple personality disorder. I so dearly love this big, silly episode, which exists right smack dab in the middle of the show's craziest epoch, or at least one of its crazy epochs, before Stabler left and the series leveled out for a little while, that I thought I would pitch it to Extra Hot Great for a canon entry. So I went to HG's looming BlackRock-esque production offices, where the show's lead producer greeted me coldly.
This is so embarrassing. Have we met?
We have, in fact, met, as I've been a guest on the show multiple times. Anyway, I presented my pitch and was immediately insulted.
Some kind of whack job.
Trying to keep my composure in the face of such obstinance, I asked the producer if maybe I could seek Tara's approval directly, but was told she was unwilling to talk.
She's not very comfortable around people. A lot like her friend the Loxosceles reclusa, the brown recluse.
Undaunted, I suggested that maybe I could speak with Sarah instead, but that was a dead end too.
She's out in the field somewhere collecting specimens. She's about milk the ones we have dry.
All other avenues exhausted, I sought out Dave. I was actually able to reach him on the reception desk's phone, but he stonewalled me by rambling about various inscrutable quizzes he was planning. Regrettably, I lost my patience.
Enough. I've had enough of your games.
At that point, the podcast brass was itching to get rid of me, and as they tried to usher me out of Extra Hot Great Headquarters, I protested.
Would you please tell this a-hole that I didn't do anything wrong?
Trying to calm me down, one of the security people asked me if I even know what a podcast is. I answered them clearly and factually.
What is it, some kind of high-tech rear projection? No.
It seems that wasn't enough, and so I was tossed out onto the street, unable to inform the masses about one of SVU's great hours, a funny and twisty 42 minutes that has a great and surprisingly bleak payoff. I ranted this at the locked doors of EHG Central until I heard the sirens approaching, and I decided to scram.
Pack up the phone, show's over.
What a shame that Tara, Sarah, Dave, and the rest of you will never hear this particular gospel, but what can you do? That's life on these mean New York City streets. I did my best. And look, to the security staff at one Extra Hot Great Trade Center, I say this.
Bye-bye, butthead. Bye-bye.
All right, that's it. So stupid. I love this episode. What more is there to say?
All right, I'm going to go first and just say that I wasn't sure. I had to ask Tara halfway through this. Is this a canon presentation or is this a no-neck presentation? And the answer either way is yes. And that's all I'm going to say. It's a yes. I think this presentation, such as it was, speaks to my mindset as I was watching this episode.
Mm-hmm. I'll go next and let Sarah, who is our expert on this show, close things up.
God.
Richard, what I love about your appearances is that you, A, always do a canon presentation, and B, it's never the same kind of a thing. You previously have pitched us Australian Survivor and The Simpsons. And now this, and the three could not truly be more different from one another. And taking the conceptual approach to this episode about a woman who, spoiler, completely fakes dissociative identity disorder and fully does almost get away with it. She comes so close. It's like, it's amazing. Every time Cynthia Nixon unveils a new personality, it's a revelation. Every moment feels true, and it is because she is such a great actress, winning the Emmy, as you said, that we buy it every single time. She's wonderful. I can't believe this character was an entomologist. She is wasted in the field milking spiders for considering how she gets so far with this scam. Excellent presentation. Excellent pick. I love it, Sarah.
As everybody knows, one of my criteria for canon is, did I want to keep watching this? I mean, of course I do. But then the next episode is Avatar, which I got into the canon somehow, even though it's Vixie Platinum and some of the worst another universe graphics since The Lawnmower Man. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think when you're dealing with peak bonkers SVU, it can be canon or no-nack. Dave is right. We had this conversation about Avatar, I'm pretty sure. And between, like, I'm going to say season 7 to, like, 11, there are certain boxes that get ticked in the episodes. Like, almost all the legendary episodes come from this period. There's usually a huge name guest star doing all the acting. Here it was Cynthia Nixon. You have a, like, callback in some way to other franchises in the Law and Order verse. Here it's that Cynthia Nixon played an extremely early guest star version of Bernie Getz.
Season 1, I think.
In the Mothership show. Mm-hmm. Ice-T actually is in that episode. He's what's playing on the boombox in the opening scene where she shoots the kids.
Wow.
You just have, like, really, like, weird stuff. And then you have completely unprofessional behavior that they hang a light on and then continue to behave unprofessionally. Like, in the beginning of the episode, Captain Cragen is being shipped off because he can't control his deranged, compromised squad. They put a JFK, like, assassination truther in charge in the form of Munch, RIP. And then you have constant horrible references to the mentally ill with phrases like Fruit Loops, get the butterfly net, all of this stuff, that it's just like the more contact you have with this era of Stabler, the harder it is to believe that he wasn't killed by someone he worked with. Like, why didn't Chester Lake just, like, kick this guy to death? You have to wonder. Also, I love the Chester Lake era. I know it's just me out here on this limb. But this is, like, peak. When you think of SVU at its most, like, Benson has a terrible haircut. This one apparently was an off-season accident, and they hang a light on that, too. Early in the episode, this is peak, like, ruffled blouse under a V-neck and two necklaces Benson.
Yep.
Peak weird cases that, like, you start at a certain place and then end up Truffaut style, like, five towns over, and you're like, how the fuck did we get here? There's an ambiguous ending that it's, you're not sure how it turned out, but you're pretty sure it was bad for everybody, including the squad. You got BD Wong, love that guy. You got Balky. Love that guy. I mean, this is everything that peak SVU should be. And it's actually a surprisingly good performance from Cynthia Nixon, even though it's turned up to like 14.
We forgot to mention, fucking Kathleen is in this episode too. The worst character in the entire franchise, being a huge bitch.
She gets some business.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work for an audio format, obviously, but there is no, for me, there is no more indelible image of SVU's, you know, wilder eras. I mean, I guess Cragen hugging a monkey, or a monkey hugging Cragen, that's probably number one.
Also in
In the canon already.
Good,
yes.
Good. But number two is a be-pigtailed Cynthia Nixon grinning while holding an enormous butcher's knife.
Yeah.
That's iconic for me.
Yep.
Yeah. Right up there with Robin Williams in Grand Central Station screaming at people, excuse me, sheeple. And I guess I should try to get that episode in as well. But yeah, I loved this presentation. Perfect. Because what else can you say? It's a demented episode, and either you feel fondly and like that's canonical for this period of SVU, or you're a monster. Let's vote.
All right, let's vote. I'm going to say yes for all the reasons that I didn't say, plus this one when Balky is confronted with everything that his patient did, including, I don't know, shooting her parents in the chest with a shotgun and various things. Oh, that's no good.
Yeah.
I originally clipped, I was going to have that clip, that I should have used it because it's just very, it's deliberately comical, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Tar.
Yes. At the end of this episode, I threw my arms in the air and was like, this is everything you want an SVU to be. And it is. I mean, Sarah is right that it's not correct and it's extremely insensitive, but like, we don't come to this show for that. And we didn't get it in this episode, and God bless.
All right, Sarah, make this official. Canon worthy or not?
We really are cuckoo magnets. Yes.
All right. So that means... Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, Season 9, Episode 1, Alternate. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot great canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
And let's give it up to Richard for that presentation. That
gorgeous.
Was super fun.
Yes.
Thank you. The other option was just to play the whole episode for you guys.
All right. We need to find out who the winner and the loser of the week is. Tara has this week's winner.
Well, if you've been on the internet, you already know that Friends is currently celebrating its 30th anniversary. It premiered, three decades ago around this time. And in honor of this, Max is giving it a game show spinoff for fans to play. It's only four episodes. And like, I have to say, the Friends is an extremely embarrassing thing to know a lot about, but I do. And even more embarrassing is that I'm already like pre-mad about how easy this show is probably going to be. Like, I will watch it and I will be irritated that it's so cinchy and not actually any kind of a test for true fans at all, like me, a huge loser. So very mixed feelings about this game show. But, you know, congratulations, Friends.
All right. And Sarah D. Bunting has our loser of the week.
Yes, I do. The Cold Case Revival is dead at CBS. Honestly, I was kind of only looking forward to it to see what they would do with the theme. But we have the theme. in our hearts. And really, this makes Tara a winner because the way that this theme song Holler was rendered in our episode rundown was really something. And I may get a tattoo of it right over my heart.
Thank you so much.
It's an iconic piece of music. It also plays in the trailer for the Diane Lane Richard Gere film Unfaithful.
Wow.
<Huh. laughs> Yep. Just a little fun fact for you there.
Speaking of content that's worthy of tattoo, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time. All right. This is the third game time of the season. The scores are Tara, 0. Sarah, 0. Value guess, 2 points.
Oh, no. Uh-huh.
Pressure's on. Can Richard keep the streak going? Let's find out. Today we are playing four at a time from Erica, who earns herself an extra credit topic of her choosing, plus a free shirt from the EHG store at throughmethods.com. And little note about that, there's a whole bunch of shirts that I just put back up after a lengthy absence due to stupid things that you don't care about. But Bacula's back, Obey the Rules Dude's back, whole bunch of stuff is back. Aww. So if you're getting freebie shirts like Erica, or you just want to buy one, go check that out, throughmethods.com. Lots of stuff back in the mix. And if you have a suggestion for something you'd like to see that's new, let me know. All right, here's how today's game's going to work. I'm going to read you the first 12 words of a show's opening, either the theme song, lyrics, or a narration from the opening. 4 words at a time. So if you get it from the first 4 words, you're going to get 4 points. If you get it from the second batch, 3 points. From the third batch, 2 points. And if you still don't have it after that, I'm going to give you somebody from the show, after which a correct guess is worth 1. So you're going to have to give me the name of the show. You only get 1 guess, so make it count, okay?
Oh, okay.
All right. Note, if the theme song or narration contains the name of the show, that will be redacted and it will give you an extra word after that. So you still get 4 words, but I will redact the name of the show or a character or something like that. So here's an example. So, no one told.
Friends.
That's right. Loser Friends fan Tara Ariano for the correct answer on that one. That was Friends. Your life was gonna be this way. Your, and if you still don't have it, I would have given you Jennifer Aniston for the answer, Friends. All right, we're going to skip Steal Meals today. However, there is one Grossworth Equalizer Challenge zone in the mix to help who is ever in last. 27 questions today. Are we ready to play 4 at a time?
Almost, because I just wanted to give an update to the non-regulation game time prizing from last week when we played the Supernatural game. Sarah was obligated to get a gift for me that was Supernatural related and was under $6.66. Hmm. And she did, and it arrived already, a bunch of spooky nail stickers. So I am all ready for the holiday. Thank you so much, Sarah. And thank you again, Mademoiselle Caroline, for last week's game.
Well, let's throw it to Pinky to see who's going first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, we're going to go Tara, then Sarah, then Richard for our order today. Are we ready to play 4 at a time?
Yes.
Yes.
Reminder, Tara, this is from the opening theme or opening narration.
Okay.
We're going to give you up to 3 sets of 4 words. Here we go. Round 1, this is the easier round, according to Erica.
Okay.
Thank you for being...
The Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls, yes, of course. 4-point answer there to Sarah. Our whole universe was.
Our whole universe was. All her. I need a hint.
In a hot dense.
Next 4, please.
State, then nearly 14.
Next 4.
That was your last 4. So your next hint's going to be an actor from the show, and your actor is Jim Parsons.
Oh, Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory is correct. That's a 1-point answer to Richard for your first opening narration or theme set. We have, hey, baby, I hear.
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
Hey, baby, I hear that's your first clue.
I need another 4.
The blues a-callin' tossed.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Okay, that's Frasier.
That is Frasier. You ought to know you're Frasier. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Tell me why I...
Mad about you.
Mad about you. Tell me why. Whoa. I love you like...
Wow.
Yes. Back to Sarah. It's been a long...
Enterprise.
Enterprise is correct. 4 points. Thank you.
Speaking of Bacula.
Jesus.
Blue.
To Richard. It's time for redacted and... It's time for redacted and...
Muppet Show?
No.
No. Oh.
Anybody know that one off that first one?
Mm-mm.
It's time for Animaniacs and we're zany to the max.
Oh, I've
kind of close.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great area. Wrong show. Back to Tara.
Yep.
We all use math.
Next.
Every day to tell.
Next.
Time to handle money.
Jonovision? I have no idea.
Anybody know it just for shits and grins? Want to put a guess out there?
Numbers?
Numb-threers is what we were looking for.
Oh.
Yes.
All right. Shit, of course.
Sarah D. Bunting. I can't do this.
Next four.
All on my own.
Next four.
No, I know I'm...
Last hint, please.
All right, your last hint is an actor from the show. And this actor sounds like you're vomiting. It is Zach Braff.
Oh, Christ. Scrubs.
Scrubs. I'm no Superman.
Every fucking time. At least I got it.
His generation's Josh Radnor. Zach Braff.
Ouch. To Oof. Richard. It's a rare condition.
That is Family Matters.
It is Family Matters.
Nice.
4 point answer.
Wow, nice.
Nice. In this day and age. To read any. Yes. To Tara.
Yep.
Back in the 90s.
Oh, no. Next.
I was in a...
BoJack Horseman.
Very famous TV show. Yes, BoJack Horseman. 3 points. Sarah. In the not too.
Next.
Distant future... Next Sunday.
Oh. Next?
AD, there was a. In the not too distant future, next Sunday, AD, there was a.
I need an actor, please.
Joel Hodgson. Jesus Christ.
Hodgson.
Hodgson.
MST3K?
Yes. Good for 1 point. This is for Richard. We'll take us into our score break and our Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Your first chunk is Here We Come Walkin'.
I need more, please.
Down the street, we.
More, please.
Get the funniest looks.
Oh, an actor, please.
Davy Jones.
Oh, the Monkees?
The Monkees, good for a point. Hey. All right.
I'm too young for that.
I know.
I almost said that. I know it's true.
No. All right, let's get our scores, please.
Okay, I have 11. Richard has 8. Sarah has 7.
All right, that means Sarah D. Bunting, you are in the Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Woo! Give me a number between 1 and 8. We'll see what box you get.
Oh, boy.
2.
We haven't played from this box, but we've played from one that's very similar. This is Trivial Pursuit DVD Pop Culture Edition. So these are the non-video questions from this. So we're going to give you 6 TV questions from six different cards. See how you do.
I like your chances with this one, Sarah. Good luck.
We're going to give you 3 and 6, okay? 3 and 6 for this one.
Gotcha. All right.
Good luck.
Here's your first one. What remake of an old TV series starred Desmond Wilson and Ron Glass?
I don't know. Dragnet?
That's incorrect. We're looking for The New Odd Couple, so The Odd Couple reboot.
What? I've never heard of that in my life.
Mm-mm.
What character from another TV show cross over as an old army buddy of Hello Larry's Larry?
Radar? Are you looking for show or character? Doesn't matter.
Character.
Guess.
It doesn't matter. Neither was correct. Mr. Drummond from Different Strokes.
No kidding. Wow.
Different Strokes. Huh. All right.
Two down, four to go. Who won an Emmy in 1995 for a character he created on another show in 1961? Oh, boy. These are not easy questions.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I jinxed you, sir.
Oh, God. Who was that guy? Created on another show in 1961? Adam West.
Carl Reiner. Carl Reiner. It doesn't say what it was.
Good for him. I'm mad about you.
Okay.
Missed that guy.
He played Alan whatever.
All right. You need to get these next three for your 3 points, Sarah. What does Ross say when Rachel accuses him of having cheated on her?
This is the level of question that's going to be on that show. I'm fucking telling you right now.
To advance to the next round on Super Friends, you must answer this one brain teaser.
We were on a split up. Just kidding. We were on a break.
Correct.
We were broken, weren't we?
Were we not?
Who was the band leader for the Electric Mayhem?
Dr. Teeth.
Dr. Teeth, yes. All right. Comes down to this last question.
Oh, sure.
Who was the host of Studs?
Oh, my God.
Who was the host of Studs?
Think back. You're in college. You're getting ready to go out drinking. And there's...
Mark?
I'm going to let you know. You're so far correct.
It was with a C, I feel like.
There's a C in there.
Mark. Oh, my God. He was a fucking Paul Reiser-ass looking...
He yep. was.
...guy. Mark.
Nothing you've said is wrong so far.
Dostin, yeah. I can't pull it. The minute you say it, I would be so mad.
Do you know it? Tara.
Mark DiCarlo.
DiCarlo, yeah.
Oh, I never would have gotten that.
Oh, heartbreaker.
He was also on Seinfeld with Alec Berg.
Oh, he was so close.
He was really sweet when I was a contestant on Studs.
Nice You're guy. Definitely too young for that.
All right, let's get back into the game. Back to Tara. Just
yes.
to remind you, I'm giving you up to 12 words, 4 words at a time.
Got it.
You name the show. This is my stop. We're still in round one, by the way, the easier round. This is my stop.
Next.
Got to get off.
Oh, next.
I might go pop.
Oh. Getting an actor.
The voice of Tracy Grandstaff.
No idea. Daria. I know that's not right.
Correct.
What?
It is Daria.
It is?
Oh, yes.
Shit.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Well done.
Saved the 1 point at the end. Nicely okay. done. Sarah. Theorizing that one could.
Next four, please.
Time travel within his.
Quantum Leap?
Quantum Leap is a 3-point answer. Own lifetime. Dr. Sam, etc., etc. To Richard. Baby, if you've ever.
Next, please.
Wondered, whatever became.
I mean, I have, I guess, but I think it's not right. So, next, please.
Of me, I'm living.
Actor,
one more
please.
Clue. Give you an actor if you need it.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Howard Hessman is your actor.
It's not who I thought you were going to say.
Mr. Belvedere. I don't know.
What if he had said Lonnie Anderson?
WKRP?
Yes, that was the correct answer.
No, my guess on the first one was
Real Dinosaurs, or whatever that show was called.
Just Dinosaurs.
If you ever wonder. Yeah.
Oh, I'm the baby?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the mama.
Tara.
Yeah.
I'm your basic average.
Next.
Girl, and I'm here.
I'm just going to take a flyer and say crazy ex-girlfriend. Shit.
You are incorrect. To save the world was your last bit of the word. Stuff.
So nobody? Like Kim Possible or something?
Kim Possible was correct, yes.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
All right, this is question 17.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, it's pretty cool.
It is for Sarah. If you could gaze.
Next four, please.
Into the future, you...
I was wrong about part of that. If you could gaze into the future. Next four, please.
Might think... Life would.
Weirdly, this is scanning in my head to a different theme song that I know it isn't. Could I have the actor, please?
Raven Simone.
The Cosby Show?
Oh. Incorrect. Anybody want to take a crack at that? Raven Simone?
That's a Raven?
That's a Raven, yes.
Oh.
Finally, being young pays
too
off,
old.
Richard. Here's your actual question, though. Now, the story of...
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
No, shit.
No, that is not right. A wealthy family who...
lost Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Everything and the...
Hillbilly, Beverly Hillbillies.
Nope, it's Arrested
Development.
Oh, okay, sorry, yeah. Blind spot.
He didn't. That was a narrator. All right, here is question. Everybody's last easy question, according to Erica.
Oh, God.
There's only a couple of these for the harder. There's only a couple of these for the harder, guys. Don't get too worried about it. Long ago in a...
Next.
Distant land, I redacted, unleashed...
Next.
Unleash an unspeakable evil.
Sure. Next.
The voice of Phil Lamar.
Well, that could be literally anything.
Yeah.
Is a Samurai Jack.
Yes, Samurai Jack for 1 point. Sarah, wish she got that
unspeakable
one.
Unspeakable evil.
Can I just point out, by the way, Arrested Development, now the story of, and Fresh Prince is, now this is a story.
Yeah.
I was very close.
You were very close, but we're still judging you, Richard.
No, I know. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm not.
She is. She's lying. She's playing nice. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah, like I'm known to do.
The story you are. The story you are.
Next four, please.
About to see is.
Names have been changed to protect the innocent and the guilty. Is this Dragnet?
Yes, Dragnet.
Nice.
Yes, true. The names and et cetera, et cetera. Yes, 3 point answer from Sarah. This is our last question of the easy round. It is for Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Take my love. Take.
Next, please.
My land. Take me.
Next, please.
Where I cannot stand.
I need an actor, please.
Nathan Fillion.
Oh. Firefly.
Firefly is good for 1 point.
I really wanted you to say Tone The Rookie.
Tone matched my face.
The Rookie.
Castle.
Everybody has two questions left, so let's get the scores.
Okay, Richard has 9 points. Sarah and I are tied with 13 each.
Bullshit.
All right, I'm calling an audible. I'm doing a second equalizer challenge zone just for Richard. Here we go.
Hey!
Whoa.
Don't pick two.
Yeah, don't pick two.
You already know what two is.
Yeah,
I don't like two. One bit.
I'm giving you this opportunity because you're disadvantaged because you're so young.
He
I'm
is.
A baby.
All right. 1 to 8. You already know what two is, but you don't know what any of the others are.
1 to 8. I'm going to go with 7.
7 is the 1990s edition of Trivial Pursuit. So I will read you TV-related questions from the viewing category. And with the 90s box, each question is all about a particular year, so you get that piece of information as well. Here we go.
Good luck!
1993 is the year. What sitcom drew an audience of 80 million viewers for its final episode in 1993?
Sitcom ending in 1993. Cheers.
You are correct. Woo! 1995, Richard. What Money Honey was the first TV reporter to broadcast live from the trading floor of the New York Stock Exchange?
Money Honey.
Then she lost her mind. I guess that's a hint.
Additional information from Tara.
Not really.
Maria Bartiromo?
Fuck yeah.
Correct. 2 for 2. 96. What actress had a toothbrush fall in the toilet on Seinfeld before Sex in the City beckoned?
Kristen Davis.
Yeah.
All right, you got 3 points. If you get the next three, we're going to double it to 6.
Wow, okay.
1996. Who was the only cast member of the Larry Sanders Show to cop an Emmy?
Cop? Yep. Tambor.
Oh, no. Rip Torn, deservedly so.
Oh, damn it. I knew that. Yeah.
I would have said Jeffrey Tambor, too. That's right.
Your streak ends there, but you did get 3 points, which is going to tighten things up considerably. Let's quickly get the updated scores, please.
Okay, they definitely are closer. Now Richard has 12, Sarah and I still tied with 13, so it's so close.
All right, anybody's game, let's get to it. This is the harder round, according to Erica. We start with Tara.
Yes.
There are those who...
Next.
Believe that life here...
I'm going to just take a gamble. Is this Battlestar Galactica?
Which one?
No,
you're fine.
Oh, okay.
That is the original Battlestar Galactica narration. Life here began out there, far, blah, 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 blah. Yes, that's a 3-point answer on the harder round her. Sarah, I had a perfect life.
Next.
Until I was in...
Hint.
A coma for 6...
I need the actor, sorry.
Your actor is Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh, wow.
Oh, shit. I actually watched this shit, too. Is that the 4400? It's... My God. I can picture the Stephen King cover. What the hell is the name of this thing?
Coma Man. Actually,
Coma Man.
That was like
does whatever a Coma Man can.
Michael Crichton book almost, I think. Coma?
Oh,
shit. 16 Candles, the college years.
Yep. Richard got it. All right. I had a perfect life until I was in a coma for 6 and then, I don't know, seconds? Pretty boring show. What's the show?
The show is the, it's like the, Jesus, I don't know. I don't remember.
Oh, tragic. The Dead Zone.
Oh, the Dead Zone.
The Dead Zone. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
The Penguin. Oh, my God. We almost didn't do it. All right.
Where have we been?
Close one, guys. Close one. All right. Back to Richard. Whenever my life gets...
Roundhouse.
Oh, look what little baby Richard got 4 points on.
Whenever my life gets me so down, I know I can go down to where the music and the fun never ends.
Absolutely. Wow. Roundhouse, the Nickelodeon show, just netted you 4 points and could change everything. Everybody's last question is here. Let's quickly get the scores.
It did just change everything. Sarah has 13 points now. Richard and I are tied with 16 each.
All right, here we go. Tara.
Yes.
Look around you there.
Next.
Are many things to...
Next.
See that some would.
Next.
Featuring the voice of Tom Bosley.
Oh, David the Gnome.
David the Gnome is good for 1 point.
Wow.
All right.
Erica, how dare you?
Sarah.
I have to, you know, I got to respect it.
The rich and powerful. Again, that's for Sarah. The rich and powerful.
The rich and powerful. There's no way for me to even tie, except to guess wildly. So, the lone gunman.
The rich and powerful take what they want. We steal it.
Is this that modern Robin Hood thing?
Is it leverage?
It's leverage, yes. The modern Robin Hood thing. Leverage.
I'm a man animal.
Everybody was correct there.
Oh, well.
All right, so Richard, you need 1 point to tie, 2 points to win. So you can get to the third set of words, answer there, and still win.
And win. Okay, let's do it.
First set. Castle blank, home for many.
Okay, next please.
Centuries to a dreadful.
Next please.
Dynasty of Vicious Vampire. So once again, here are all yours together. Castle blank, home for many, centuries to a dreadful dynasty of vicious vampire. Now you can answer here, go for the win, or I can give you the talent, after which you can answer for a tie.
I think I have to go for a tie. Can I have the actor, please?
All right. I don't know if this is going to help you. It's the voice of David Jason. The voice of David Jason. So at least you know the type of show it is. Castle blank, home for many centuries to a dreadful dynasty of vicious vampire, featuring the voice of David
Jason. Vampire cartoon. Castlevania?
Oh, incorrect. It was a vampire cartoon. We were looking for Count Duckula.
I was going to go with Bunnicula, but I think that's only a book.
I
anyway.
Thought maybe that was in your roundhouse. But apparently not.
No, sadly, I watched cool shows.
yeah, I forgot. This is Richard Lawson we're talking to. All right, let's get the final scores here at the end of regulation, please.
Very hard-fought, close game. Sarah finished with 13, Richard 16. I just squeaked it out 17.
All right, so that means today belongs to one Tara Ariano.
Tara!
Thank you, Erica, for that one. And well done, everybody. That was a squeaker. And that is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. We waddled around the Batman Extended Universe for a look at Colin Farrell as the Penguin before going around the dial with stops at Matlock, Alex versus America, and the Lyle and Eric Menendez are Richard never quite got around to submitting his canon pitch, but we put that show in the canon anyways. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Erica. Next up, it's the September Forcening on Extra Extra Hot Great, and then come back here on EHG Prime next week for Dr. Odyssey. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I was good, wasn't I?
Sarah D. Bunting.
This job sucks.
And Richard Lawson.
See you at the Roundhouse.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I'm not saying I didn't see crazies in Brooklyn, but you guys are cuckoo magnets.
All right, so after the show, Richard had to leave quickly, so let's do the tiebreaker from our Game Time little after-show bonus for all the people that didn't just leave when they started hearing the outro music. Shame on you if you're one of them. Here we go. It's the tiebreaker.
Okay.
Opening credits, one word at a time. First person to get it right wins. You only get one guess per word. Here we go. It's
It's. Any guesses here?
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Time.
Chipmunks.
It's Time. Chipmunks is not correct.
Muppet Show.
Muppet Show. It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. Sarah D. Bunting wins $500.
Wow!
Wow! Congratulations,
wow.
Sarah.
Muppet Bucks. My favorite.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.